Hello, this is Danielle Fisher. Welcome to Melanoma Insights for Professionals, brought to you by Melanoma Institute Australia. Sentinel node biopsy plays a key role in assessing the prognosis of melanoma. Today's podcast is a special feature from our deep dive training module for surgeons on when to recommend an SNB. This multimedia learning module, Sentinel Node Biopsy from Guidelines to Practice, can be found on our melanoma education portal at melanomaeducation.org.au. In this podcast, you will hear Professor Georgina Long, Professor John Thompson, and Associate Professor Sydney Ching discuss the history of SNB in the management of melanoma and its current role in the stratification of patients into those who may benefit from adjuvant therapies versus those for whom active surveillance is more appropriate. The other potential benefits of SNB are also discussed, including the likelihood of SNB itself reducing the risk of nodal recurrence. Please note this podcast was accurate at the time of recording, July 2022. Enjoy.
Thank you for joining us for our Sentinel Node Biopsy Module 2 Fireside Chat today. John, can you please comment on how management of the regional lymph nodes have changed in the last three decades? Maybe take us back from when elective lymph node dissection was the standard practice.
It's an extraordinary story. Up until the early 1990s, elective lymph node dissection for melanoma was widely practiced. And any patient who had a melanoma of intermediate thickness or even thicker was recommended to have an elective lymph node dissection. That, of course, was associated with considerable morbidity, and the benefits of it had not been shown. There had been two large international trials, the Intergroup trial led by Charles Bolsch in the United States and the WHO Melanoma Group trial led by Pino Cascinelli, both of which had shown a probable survival benefit for intermediate thickness melanomas, but not conclusively. Then in the early 90s, Don Morton from Los Angeles proposed sentinel node biopsy as a way of identifying patients who might benefit from elective lymph node dissection, but more importantly, identifying patients who were unlikely to benefit and could therefore avoid elective lymph node dissection. And once the results of his first multicenter selective lymphadenectomy trial were published, the practice of elective lymph node dissection almost immediately fell away, and sentinel node biopsy became the treatment of choice for staging principally, although there was this hint in the background that it might actually improve survival. Then Don Morton proposed and undertook the second multicenter selective lymphadenectomy trial, comparing sentinel node biopsy only with sentinel node biopsy plus completion dissection if the sentinel node was positive. That showed no statistically significant benefit for completion node dissection. And when that was published in 2017, almost immediately, the practice of completion lymph node dissection fell away. And these days, patients with sentinel node biopsy are not routinely offered elective completion lymph node dissection.
So currently, as we know, the standard of care is that patients with positive sentinel lymph node, depending obviously on breast node thickness, the number of positive sentinel nodes, and maybe in future, the size of the tumor deposit, are generally considered for adjuvant therapy, and those who are sentinel node negative are observed. Very recently, with the publication of the KEYNOTE-716 trial showing that in resected stage 2B and C melanoma, so patients with high-risk melanoma, primary melanoma, but negative sentinel lymph node, 12 months of adjuvant pembrolizumab decreases relapse-free survival and distant metastasis-free survival compared with placebo. So now sentinel node is seen by some to no longer be the gatekeeper to selection of patients for adjuvant immunotherapy. So to you, Georgina, do you think that sentinel node biopsy should still be required to access immunotherapy? And in a real-world situation, how much more impact does a positive sentinel node have over adverse features of the primary melanoma alone when it comes to you recommending adjuvant immunotherapy for resected stage 2 melanoma?
So there are two parts to that question and two answers that are important when looking at adjuvant immunotherapy. So first of all, sentinel node biopsy should not be a gatekeeper, so to speak, as to whether you can access it or not, because we now have good data for stage 2B, resected 2B, 2C, 3A with more than 1 millimeter deposit, 3B, 3C, 3D, and stage 4 for anti-PD-1 resected melanoma that decreases the relapse-free survival. However, sentinel node biopsy has a very important role in prognosticating so that you can have an informed discussion about the risks and benefits of adjuvant systemic therapy. Adjuvant systemic therapy has risks associated with it. There are toxicities. Now, anti-PD-1 monotherapy or pembrolizumab or nivolumab, for example, for stage 3 melanoma, they are very well tolerated drugs in the cancer field. Overall, if you look at drug therapies in cancer, these are overall very well tolerated drugs. But you do need to be able to outline what the risks are to the patient, and there are some irreversible endocrinopathies, for example, with immunotherapy. And so when you talk to someone who has a risk of, let's say, 50% of recurrence after surgery alone, knowing whether a sentinel node is involved or not can absolutely change that, because all of a sudden you take, let's say, a 2C melanoma. We know from the old AJC staging system, if you take a clinical 2C melanoma and do not know the sentinel node status, their risk of recurrence could be variable. If a sentinel node is involved, it's highly prognostic. We know that their risk is 50%. If there is no sentinel node involved, their risk drops down to about, that's 50% of death overall at 5 years. I'm putting everything together. I'm just lymph node involvement, let's say, whether it be the size of the node will matter. But if you know that there is no lymph nodes involved, that risk is very different. You halve that risk at least. So having a discussion with a patient about the risks and benefits of a toxic treatment, you need to know their prognosis. If you have a risk of only 10%, 15% of recurrence, let's say, versus someone who has a risk of 50%, that's a different conversation. And patients' risk appetite for side effects increases when they know their risk of recurrence is higher. So in summary, it's not a gatekeeper to access immunotherapy because of the data. We have good data for stage 2 right up to stage 4, but it certainly is a critical component of assessing prognosis and therefore having an informed discussion. Having said that, not all my colleagues around the world agree, and there is a big push to do away with sentinel node biopsy. However, I think most of us believe that that could only happen if we had some new, better test to predict recurrence. So until we have that, sentinel node is important.
So essentially you're saying that it is very important, despite effective immunotherapy in the adjuvant setting, to differentiate between stage 2 and stage 3 melanoma.
I do think it is important for a good discussion. Some patients may say, no, my risk is so high, even if I have stage 2C, I don't need to know that it's even higher. But that is a discussion to be had with the patient. Some patients may choose not to have a sentinel node biopsy, but the surgeons need to be able to have that discussion with the patient and say, okay, you've got a thick melanoma, we've removed it. We know without a sentinel node biopsy, I can't be precise about your prognosis, but it's at least X percent. And if the patient then says, oh, with that percent, I'm going to have drug therapy, then it's a discussion with the surgeon. Well, maybe we won't do a sentinel node biopsy in this case. But if the patient would like more prognostic information so they can make an informed decision about the risks of drug therapy, then a sentinel node biopsy is very important. It's our best tool. It is our best tool over and above the primary features to give us a more accurate prognosis.
And do you ever think of it from a cost to healthcare perspective, the number needed to treat as a clinician?
So the data for KEYNOTE 716, which is a trial of resected stage 2B, 2C, all patients in that trial underwent a sentinel node biopsy. So they were sentinel node biopsy negative. We were not expecting to see early results. We did our first interim analysis with only a 13 months median follow-up. We were not expecting a result, and we saw already a hazard ratio of the relapse-free survival of 0.64, and that was highly significant, meaning that drug therapy reduced the risk of recurrence by 36%. Now, when you calculate the number needed to treat, you use the absolute percentage of recurrence at a certain landmark. I am expecting the number needed to treat to improve significantly over time. At that first initial analysis, with only 13 months of follow-up, we could say the number needed to treat was around 12 to 14 patients, meaning I had to treat 12 or 14 to prevent one recurrence. But that's when we had an early look at the data and we weren't expecting it to be positive. Already at 24 months, we know with drug therapy, you have a less than 20% chance of recurrence. Without drug therapy, you have a nearly 30% chance of recurrence. So when we start to look at the landmarks at four-year follow-up, at five-year follow-up, the number needed to treat is going to be much less than what it currently is. So I think we have to wait a little longer. It's still early days to really settle on how many patients we are really truly curing and then get that number needed to treat. For stage three melanoma, we already know it's less than 10 now.
I think Georgina raises a really important point. The trial you just mentioned, Georgina, involved pathologically staged 2B2C disease. And according to the current AJCC 8th edition staging system, you cannot stage a patient without a sentinel node biopsy. So you don't know without doing a sentinel node biopsy if they are in fact stage 2B or stage 2C. They might be 3A or B or even C. You know, that's just one aspect of sentinel node biopsy that needs emphasizing, that it's the most accurate staging procedure we currently have, better than all the clinicopathological features, and we've shown that. So staging is one of its key roles.
So, John, from a surgical oncologist perspective, no prospective study has so far quantified the benefit of sentinel node biopsy in terms of reduced nodal recurrence in the setting of effective adjuvant therapy. So can you extrapolate from the available published data the likely benefit of sentinel node biopsy in regional disease control in the era of effective immunotherapy?
Yes, we can. And it's important to emphasize, I think, that one of the great benefits, even without adjuvant therapy, of having a sentinel node biopsy is that you dramatically reduce the risk of regional node recurrence. And if you have a sentinel node biopsy, that risk is diminished by 70 or 80% without adjuvant immunotherapy. Now, if you extrapolate from available data, and there have been no randomized trials yet to prove this, but you can calculate roughly what the effects of adjuvant therapy would be on regional disease control. And if you do that, I've got the figures here, the node field recurrence rate, if you don't have a sentinel node biopsy but have adjuvant therapy, is around 27%. So roughly one in every four patients will develop regional node recurrence with adjuvant therapy if they have not had a sentinel node biopsy. If they have had a sentinel node biopsy, that risk of regional recurrence reduces to about 9%. So that's a pretty substantial reduction, and suggests that even if you're going to give adjuvant immunotherapy, the risk of developing regional node recurrence, which requires extensive surgery with all its complications, is greatly reduced if you do have a sentinel node biopsy.
And the figures are for T3B,
correct,
T4 melanomas.
Correct, T3B, T4.
That's interesting data, John. Where did you get a bunch of patients with 2-3B, 2-4 that did not have a sentinel node biopsy but got immunotherapy? Where was that trial?
It wasn't a trial. We're talking about, you know,
MAA data.
We're just extrapolating. These are woolly figures.
Okay, good.
They're
all just
rough estimates.
Just to clarify.
No. There's no
trial
data.
So there's no randomised.
It's what we need. But
yeah, We do.
Yeah, we don't have it.
And we may get it because some of the newer adjuvant trials that are about to open, and we've spent hours discussing this at board meetings on these designs, they are going to allow patients with a clinical stage 2B, 2C melanoma who have not had a sentinel node and also who have had a sentinel node. I suspect there will be some countries, for example, like Germany and France, or maybe mainly France, where a lot of patients will get on without having had a sentinel node, whereas Australia, Germany, US, our patients will be having sentinel node, and then we can do a subgroup analysis.
I think that will provide the answer that we're looking for, but based on rough estimates, that's the sort of reduction in regional node recurrence that will be achieved.
Mm. So, Georgina, do you think that from a medical oncology perspective, the efficacy of adjuvant therapy towards metastasis to distant organs is the same as metastasis to regional nodal basin?
I do. It's a great question. So there's a lot of discussion about that too, particularly from our surgical colleagues, wondering whether immunotherapy has a similar benefit in local disease as to distant disease. And the data does not answer the question at all at this point. We are seeing a greater reduction in distant metastasis, but these are patients who have undergone sentinel node biopsies, etc. Biologically, it would not make sense that you can prevent one type of organ metastasis but not another. It does not fit what we've seen, for example, in the stage 4 setting where patients would have concurrent local disease and distant metastases. So I think there's much more to the story, and it could be that the prelude to their adjuvant treatment, as John has mentioned, sentinel node biopsy, et cetera, could impact what we're seeing. But I don't think there is any good biological rationale that locoregional recurrence would be less prevented than distant metastases.
It's important to keep in mind, of course, that not every sentinel node positive patient is going to go on to develop distant metastases. And likewise, not every sentinel node negative patient will not go on to develop distant metastases. It's not absolute by any means, but it's the best guide we've got at the present time.
So, Georgina, back to the KEYNOTE-716 trial, do you think the improved relapse-free survival and distant metastasis-free survival are likely to translate into improved overall survival?
That's a really good question. So the trial's randomized. We're seeing a statistically significant benefit. There is no doubt we are preventing death from melanoma. However, unlike many other cancers, in melanoma, we have an opportunity to so-called prevent death or cure in the stage 4 setting. So the question is, if you take a stage 2 or 3 resected patient and you watch them, and then they develop distant metastasis, and then you treat with your immunotherapy, will we save just as many lives in the long term as giving it early, immediately after resection in the adjuvant setting? I suspect we may not see a significant overall survival benefit for the more modern trials where we have a lot of options in stage 4 to salvage, if that makes sense. However, the early trials, particularly of the BRAF and MEK inhibitors that were conducted in 2012, I think we will see an overall survival benefit because in those days, the patients did not have many treatment options for stage 4 when they recurred. But it is a question that is yet to be answered. And the trials we are doing, we are designing crossover, meaning the patients who get the placebo arm for resected early stage melanoma, when they recur, they're able to cross over to immunotherapy. So we get a very pure relapse-free survival and distant metastasis-free survival, but we are crossing all the placebo patients over to immunotherapy. And in that case, we may not see an overall survival benefit. It'll be interesting to see what the Kaplan-Meier curves will look like. They may separate a little bit in favor of earlier drug, but we have to wait and see. We also have to think about the morbidity of carrying the weight of that fear of recurrence as well, or that a recurrence that could have been prevented may be catastrophic for the patient. For example, a brain metastasis that bleeds or is in a very eloquent area that leaves the patient with the neurological issue. Having said that, we are now increasing our surveillance. So we are picking things up early, so that is less likely as well, if that makes sense.
I'm a little embarrassed, Georgina, that you've introduced a dirty four-letter word in your presentation just now, and that word is cure.
I'm brave, John, unlike my colleagues.
Being provocative, do you think that your magic drugs are simply delaying death from melanoma, or are they actually curing them? Are we in a position to come to grips with that yet?
I think I've been using the word cure cautiously for probably about 3 or 4 years at opportune times. I'm finding I'm using it more often, and so are my colleagues. So some
it doesn't
of my,
make it right, Georgina.
So I'll give you the data. It's all data-driven, John, all data-driven.
Absolutely.
So, and the reason is my very, very conservative colleagues are getting more confident as well, and that's because the data talks. We have now converted to looking at melanoma-specific survival in advanced disease. We never used to do that. Melanoma-specific survival as an endpoint was for early disease. That was not the purview of medical oncologists at all, or wasn't a word we used for medical oncology trials. But we are now having at 7.5, 8, 9 year follow-up and landmark survivals, we've now had to convert to melanoma-specific survival. And I'll give you one very good example. The trial called CheckMate 067 in advanced melanoma was nivolumab combined with ipilimumab versus nivolumab versus ipilimumab alone. So it was a 3-arm randomized trial, first line advanced melanoma, stage 4. When we looked at the 5-year overall survival for the combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab, it was 52%. When we look at the melanoma-specific survival, it is 57%. And when you look at the melanoma-specific survival from year 3 to 4 to 5, it's changing by about 0.5%, whereas the overall survival drops more than that. And so what's happening is people are living long enough to die of other things and other causes. And that lack of drop in the melanoma-specific survival, which starts at around the 3-year mark, is giving us a lot more confidence about cure. And even better is the progression-free survival. So a progression-free survival Kaplan-Meier curve is a very pure indicator of a drug's activity. You only come off that curve. So the curve drops down only if you recur, you die, or you change cancer treatment. So that really tells you the activity of the drug, and that's very stable after about 3 years, very little drops. So, yeah, I do think we are curing. But let's see what happens. Melanoma is a pretty scary cancer. It's one of those rare cancers that not often, but can come back 20, 30 years later. So maybe in my grave, the medical oncologists who come after me will be much more confident using the word cure, because they'll have that sort of 20, 30, 40 year follow up.
Not that it's necessarily that important. I'm sure patients would prefer to live a few extra years, even if it's not a cure.
Yeah, exactly. But it does go back to that point. Do we have to treat early if we can cure, in inverted commas, later? And we will see in the with the data.
With regards to melanoma-specific survival, in some cases it must be difficult trying to differentiate between whether the cause of death is actually related to melanoma or melanoma treatment or some unrelated causes.
No, it's very, very easy, actually. These people are not on the drug. The drug's only treated, patients are only on drug for 2 years. So they're not on drug therapy. Late toxicities are very rare. Most of the toxicities on immunotherapy anyway happen in the first 4 months. Your risk of a toxicity after that first 4 months is about 5%, so it's low. It is actually really very easy. To say what the cause of death is might be difficult, but to say it's not melanoma is easy.
I think what you say may be true for clinical trials and so on, but in population-based data, it may be much more difficult. And I was recently looking at the SEER data, and it's very difficult to get a handle on it because you have no idea how accurate the recording of cause of death was. And once you get out beyond 5-10 years, you get the impression that the data were very fuzzy.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, database is impossible. This is trial data that I'm specifically talking about.
In the era of effective immunotherapy, do you think that we can substitute sentinel node biopsy with baseline lymphoscintigraphy and ultrasound and very close monitoring with high resolution?
Perhaps ultrasound. In a high-powered academic center where you get excellent high-resolution ultrasound of lymph nodes done by people who do this all the time, that is not the general situation in the community. And the proposal based on MSLT2 data that completion lymph node dissection not be performed but that the nodes be monitored with ultrasound was based on information obtained from a very carefully controlled clinical trial where all the ultrasonographers were trained and certified for the trial. That's not the case in the general community, so we're extrapolating. So no, I don't think that's necessarily a safe proposal.
And Georgina, can you comment on the difference in anti-PD-1 versus BRAF MEK inhibitors in resected stage 3 melanoma and how you predict that might be in resected high-risk stage 2 disease?
Sure, very good question. And just to give a bit of perspective, we do have an ongoing resected stage 2 sentinel node biopsy negative is a population trial of BRAF MEK versus placebo as adjuvant therapy in resected stage 2B and 2C melanoma. And that's called Columbus AD. That's recruiting around the world. We also have available pembrolizumab adjuvantly in stage 2B, 2C. So what do we do? How do we compare these drugs? What we see in stage 3 is the risk reduction in recurrence is about the same when we did the initial analyses across all of the trials. But we are starting to see with longer follow-up that we get a greater relapse-free survival benefit in the long term from the immunotherapies. And that mimics or mirrors what we've seen in the stage 4 setting. Both are excellent treatments. Both do prevent recurrence permanently. So there's a difference between placebo that's ongoing and permanent with longer follow-up. But over the course of many years, we're starting to see that the landmark relapse-free survival percentage is a little higher in the immunotherapy than the targeted therapies. Now, this isn't proven. It's a cross-trial, a comparison. It's got all the caveats. Both are excellent drugs. In general, we take the bias we've learned from stage 4 melanoma to stage 3 and maybe stage 2, but we don't know. We'll see the data. What I can say is anti-PD-1 therapy has irreversible toxicities, mainly endocrinopathies, hypothyroidism requiring thyroid replacement, very rarely pituitary affecting the ACTH and cortisol, and then extraordinarily rarely type 1 diabetes, which is about 8 in 1,000 patients. But they're irreversible. Also, if you have an autoimmune disease, you don't want to be triggering that. So if patients have rheumatoid arthritis. So in those cases, we will then favor BRAF-MEK for patients who have a contraindication to immunotherapy. But overall, the data shows us that both types of drugs are very similar in preventing recurrence. We do have to remember that BRAF and MEK inhibitors are only for patients with a BRAF V600 mutation, which is approximately 40% of all melanomas.
And John, how close do you think we are to finding a substitute for sentinel node status as a most important prognostic factor in melanoma?
That's an excellent question. Although enthusiastic about sentinel node biopsy as a staging procedure and for some therapeutic benefits, I think as surgeons, we all hope that we will find a better way of doing this. It is minimally invasive. There are complications of sentinel node biopsy, and if they could be avoided, that would be good. What are the options? Well, we've looked at all sorts of things. We thought some years ago we might have found the answer by looking with magnetic resonance imaging at fine needle aspirates of central nodes identified by lymphoscintigraphy. And that showed some promise, but has not proved to be the answer we were looking for. The thing that's a hot topic at the moment is gene expression profiling. And there are claims being made that this is as good as or better than sentinel node biopsy for staging purposes and prognostic purposes. That has not yet been shown conclusively at all. And it's rather worrying that the various companies marketing gene expression profile arrays are using completely different genes to look at, that there's very little commonality between them. But that science may progress, and it may be shown that that is as good as or better than sentinel node biopsy. So that could be done simply by examining the primary tumor. There are all sorts of other things in the pipeline, but at the moment there's no standout better method of staging than sentinel node biopsy. So until that happens, I think we are relying on sentinel node biopsy to provide us with the information we're seeking to get for staging and prognostic purposes.
What is the current practice locally as well as around the world for stage 3A, adjuvant in stage 3A?
In Australia, we do not have drug therapies approved for stage 3A AJCC 8th edition. We do have clinical trials of stage 3A 8th edition with more than 1 millimeter, greater than or equal to 1 millimeter of melanoma in the sentinel node.
The recent article in the Journal of Clinical Oncology looked at multi-center study, retrospective, but looked at prognosis and the size of sentinel node metastasis and found that there was a fairly distinct cut point at about 0.3 millimeters, not 1 millimeter. And less than 0.3 millimeters, the prognosis was surprisingly good, and it dropped quite dramatically once you got beyond a sentinel node metastasis size of 0.3 millimeters. Now, the original 1 millimeter cutoff, which many have used, was really plucked out of the air. It wasn't particularly data-driven. And so maybe we ought to be thinking about patients with a metastasis more than 0.3 millimeters in diameter as being at particular risk, and sparing patients with a metastasis less than 0.3 millimeters the risks and costs and so on of adjuvant therapy. I mean, these were retrospective data, but it was fairly clear-cut from a very large series.
So we need to factor that in moving forward with any clinical trial design.
Thank you very much, Georgina and John, for joining us today.
Thanks, Sydney.
Thank you.